From WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Today on the program, our Project Milwaukee Power Switch series retrospective concludes with a forum exploring the promise and reality of green energy in Wisconsin. We talk about what Wisconsin has been doing to foster growth in the green energy sector.
The Public Service Commission has, in more recent years, approved approximately $2.5 billion worth of renewable energy projects, as well as about $2.5 billion of pollution control projects. So there's a lot of activity on both of those fronts.
And we consider some alternative energy sources.
I think that whole area of waste to energy is a great opportunity that we have not fully explored as a state or as a society. Wastewater treatment plants, landfills can generate energy, farms can, and I think eventually your home may as well.
The Project Milwaukee Power Switch Forum retrospective is next on Lake Effect after the news. Welcome to Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. It's great to have your company. In mid-June, we aired a special series, Project Milwaukee Power Switch, which explored the promise and reality of green energy in Wisconsin. We concluded the series with an hour-long forum featuring a live studio audience and a panel of guests, which was recorded at the Pilot House atop Discovery World at Pier, Wisconsin. The forum was moderated by Lake Effect's Mitch Teich, and our panelists included Milwaukee Journal Sentinel writer Tom Content, who writes on energy issues for the paper, Deborah Irwin, the renewable energy specialist at the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin, Shala Werner, who's been the director of the Sierra Club John Muir chapter since 2008, Gary Radloff, who directs Midwest Energy Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Energy Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Charles McGinnis, who's the U.S. Director Commercial Energy Solutions for Johnson Controls Incorporated, and Andy Hesselbach, who's the project director of We Energies.
Let me start with a big question that I think will help us frame today's conversation. We're using the term green energy in our Project Milwaukee series. A lot of people also use the term clean energy. When we're talking about clean energy or green energy in the context of Wisconsin, what do you think exactly we are talking about? And let me just start with Chuck McGinnis, and we'll move our way all the way down the line.
When I think of clean energy, I think of a portfolio of solutions available to us that connects energy in the economy moving forward. I think that portfolio is a really important portfolio, and one that has a broad and diverse group of solutions within it. We believe that those solutions should be evaluated based on two primary criteria. One is cost effectiveness, and the second is environmental footprint. And as you look at that portfolio of solutions, I think you'll see that, you know, fossil fuel is in there, and I think everyone would probably agree that we're going to be contingent on fossil fuels for quite some time. Renewable energy is making great, great gains, and both on cost effectiveness and environmental footprint. And so we really have a lot of faith and a lot of hope in the renewable energy area. Demand response, the smart grid, being able to use loads more effectively is also really important. But we really believe that the most important priority within that portfolio is energy efficiency. We think it's the cleanest, the fastest, and the cheapest alternative for our clean energy future.
Shala Werner?
Thanks. And I would agree with Chuck there. The Sierra Club and our members throughout the state, energy efficiency is something that creates the most jobs relative to our other renewable resources that we also support and want to see expand in Wisconsin. It's something that anybody can do, whether it's retrofitting an existing structure or buying a new house and looking at its energy efficient lighting, windows, doors, heating and cooling. All these things are jobs that are also hard to outsource. So things that the Sierra Club would like to see along the lines of expanding energy efficiency in Wisconsin would be things like an energy efficiency resource standard and, you know, better building codes, increasing support for programs like Focus on Energy, that help to provide rebates to retrofit people's homes and businesses. So that's the first line of defense. The kilowatt hour that we never use is going to be the cheapest, most effective defense against climate change. And some people have trees over their houses that prevent easy solar from going up. But if you don't have that, I think it's worth looking at solar. We're really excited to see something like 10 states added huge amounts of solar to their grid last year. And it's as solar panel prices are going down and efficiency is going up, that's something that people can do as individuals to take charge of their energy use. I would say after you employ common sense energy efficiency solutions, if that's right for you. There are just huge amounts of solar in certain states, but it's not necessarily where you'd think. I mean, New Jersey has over 566 megawatts of solar, for instance. It's also something that would create a lot of jobs. So we need to increase business certainty there by improving and standardizing net metering policies if we can, and doing some other things like allowing property owners to lease solar panels on their rooftop or other property that they own. But I think that it's got huge potential and there's exciting things going on in solar as the price drops. Of course, we'd like to see more wind farms, and there's huge potential for that. You look at Iowa with over 5,000 megawatts of wind installed now, getting 24.5% of their electricity right now from wind. We've got 649 megawatts installed, I believe. And, you know, we might not be as windy as Iowa, you know, and so it is going to take a portfolio of diverse solutions, but we can do it. We can do better on all of these fronts.
Andy Hasselbalch.
If you look at the utility side, it's either the procurement or construction of different technologies, whether they be green, clean, or otherwise. And so if you look back, it is interesting to see the 10-year progression. We were less than 2% renewable if you go back to around 2000. Today, we're just on the verge of being 8% of our supply coming from renewable resources. That reflects about $30 million in investment in the state. So you get an idea of the scope of the dollars that are involved. You also see things like Energy for Tomorrow program adding more customers, and we continue to add more customers to that type of program. When we look forward, we see more of the same, if you will. There'll be opportunities and needs for more renewables. Wind right now has been the preference for our bulk production. That may change or it may expand the same. We'll see where the economics come out. I think an interesting aspect of the clean side, which ties into the energy efficiency, is if we can take one of our traditional fuel plants and for that same unit of fuel input, we can get more output, which is continually going on at plants. That is, to some degree, an emission-free kilowatt hour or megawatt hour. So in addition to green, I think it's good to see where we can get more out of the same. It avoids the need to build more in the future and is another way of containing the emissions and other costs related to production.
Gary Radloff, when we're talking green energy, what are we talking?
Well, I actually sort of prefer the term clean energy technology, and I'll kind of explain the difference of that. I think we've built an economy, what I call a legacy economy, around high carbon energy sources. And, you know, it's served us well in terms of we've obviously had a prosperous global and domestic economy. But I think we're in transition now to what I call the clean energy technology, based primarily on renewables, and that's kind of a subtle distinction because I think clean energy technology probably does include nuclear, which you know, a country like France uses quite a bit of. So I think what we're seeing here is this societal change that is occurring. We you know, in the Industrial Revolution, wanted to build up a lot of manufacturing and grow our domestic and global economies. So coal and oil kind of drove that economic growth. Now I think we're looking at a societal change, and we're not ever going to leave behind probably manufacturing, but we're looking at other types of production systems that maybe aren't as energy intensive. And so we can transition with smarter energy systems, which I think all of the panelists will probably talk about what that means, cleaner energy technology, and more renewables in that portfolio mix. So I think it's a societal transition and economic transition.
Deborah Irwin, what do you see as the meaning of clean or green energy? Your pick in terms of what term you use.
I think you could use either. But you know, Chuck started us out by talking about a portfolio of different resources, and that's definitely something that we see at the Public Service Commission. You know, we do have a diversity of clean or green energy resources that are being used currently in Wisconsin, and that includes obviously wind, hydro, and biomass, and a smaller amount of solar energy. We also are talking about energy efficiency, as others have mentioned as well. And a lot of this has to do with an interest in local resources. For the Public Service Commission, we're also talking not only about utility scale efforts like Andy and We Energies are undergoing, but also smaller things that residential or commercial folks are putting their money into. And finally, we're also talking about pollution controls when we're talking about clean energy. The Public Service Commission has, in more recent years, approved approximately $2.5 billion worth of renewable energy projects, as well as about $2.5 billion of pollution control projects. So there's a lot of activity on both of those fronts.
Tom Content, this is your beat. When you hear people talking about clean energy in this context, is everybody talking about the same thing?
They usually aren't talking about the same thing. The definitions are all over the map. Just a few years ago, we were talking about regulation of carbon emissions nationally, and clean and green energy at the time was any low-carbon energy source, anything that didn't emit carbon emissions. So nuclear and was certainly in the mix there. But I think generally, when you think of clean and green energy, people are thinking of energy efficiency and the renewable resources. It's just a question of people's point of view of what they think of that definition.
Well, and let me stick with you for just a minute because you wrote about this issue not long ago, and I'll be curious to get to the reaction of our other panelists. Where do you see Wisconsin in a national context? What does this state require in terms of clean energy? And what sort of leadership and infrastructure do we already possess? Where are we on a national scale?
Well, we just wrote about a report that just came out a week ago or so that showed by the national consulting firm Clean Edge that showed Wisconsin in the middle of the pack nationally, ranking about 19th in the top 20, I think, for clean energy, but lagging behind a lot of its peers in the Midwest. And what Wisconsin has set for itself as a goal for renewable resources on the electricity side is 10% by 2015. And the utilities are largely on track or have already met that. We Energies finished construction of a biomass plant this year that will put it on track, and the other utilities are already in good shape to meet that. But what we're seeing is other states are moving faster toward clean energy. Illinois has done aggressive building codes to stimulate energy efficiency, more efficient buildings that save energy for consumers. Minnesota just adopted a solar standard that will require a certain amount of its energy to come just from solar, whereas in Wisconsin, the cost of solar has been coming down dramatically in recent years. It still has high upfront costs. But in Wisconsin, solar just has a very small slice of the overall renewable portfolio.
Deborah Irwin, when you hear that Wisconsin's in the middle of the pack and lagging behind its peers in the Midwest, what's your reaction?
Well, Wisconsin was actually one of the first states in the nation to pass a renewable portfolio standard law. That's the law that requires the utilities to get, as Tom said, 10% of their energy from renewable resources. So, you know, being one of the first, we haven't really made a lot of changes to that law since it was passed in 2006 in its current form. You know, we're pleased at the Public Service Commission that the utilities are doing so well in complying with that requirement and at this point are on track to meet that standard ahead of schedule. You know, at the Public Service Commission, we're usually looking at balancing costs with the goals that folks want to achieve. And so at this point, that's what that picture looks like. And if the legislature decides that we want to push for a higher standard, then the PSC would be happy to evaluate the cost picture from that perspective.
Andy Hesselbach, let me ask you this, because we've heard that the utilities such as yours are on track to meet those standards. Is there any incentive for exceeding, doing better than the standards, or are you really is the legislature calling the shots and you will work with whatever the standard is?
Well, there's two drivers in any of these decisions. There's the economic side of it, and the economics can be either the on a large scale, the utility or the individual homeowner or business owner, and then there's the public policy. Right now, the renewable technologies, while dramatically improving over prior years, are still at a higher cost than their traditional counterparts. And under our obligation to serve, we have an obligation to serve in an economic fashion. So as long as, and we will always comply with public policy requirements, so we're in compliance, we expect to maintain compliance, until those cost parameters change, you'll need the public policy to usher the renewables along.
Gary Radloff, does it matter if Wisconsin is a leader?
Well, obviously we'd like to see our economy thrive and that we have good economic opportunities for people to find jobs and jobs that provide a wage that they can prosper and have their family benefit from that. I think we need to probably relook at our rules governing the electrical market. I think in order for us to really advance as a society and really improve with these technologies that I think are really dramatically improving, but obviously there's still plenty of room for improvement. The rules right now for most of our electric utilities, at least those that are regulated monopolies, investor-owned utilities, as they're called, IOUs, they're really governed by a set of rules from the 1930s and the Earl of Rural Electrification. And I think it's time to update them and modernize them to really allow our utilities to innovate, to invest more in research and development and be creative and be energy leaders. And I worry a little bit that the rule, what we call the rules of the game, are constraining our state particularly and other states with regulated utilities. So we're kind of looking at a concept called re-regulation, which is different than deregulation, and maybe later on we want to get into that topic. But re-regulation would just mean updating the rules, modernizing them so that utilities can invest in research and development, innovative new energy solutions, and not be penalized, really, which unfortunately I think under the current rules they sort of are.
Not to go on a blow-by-blow, point-by-point description, but what are some of those rules that are getting in the way?
Well, first off, most of the way the utility makes money is to invest in a lot of infrastructure and then build a rate case around that investment. I think we need to look at a set of rules that, first off, allows for new players into the marketplace. Some people call these third-party owners, and allow for more innovative companies to get into the marketplace, come up with new solutions. I think the utilities should also be allowed to play in that market if they wish. I'm not trying to kind of push them out of the market, if you will. But I think we need to allow for new money to come into this area, whether it's individual persons wanting to put a solar panel on their roof or companies that want to do that. And then also allow for greater investment in research and development. And utilities do a little of that. I don't want to say they don't. But I think they feel a little constrained because they actually have to make a case to the Public Service Commission for their investments.
You're talking about competition driving this, essentially.
Well, I think we should allow for a little more competition in the marketplace. Again, that's kind of a long debate, and if we want to get into that, we can. I do think that, in our society, we've certainly seen that over time, if you want to have innovation, competition is a great driver for it.
I want to get Andy Hesselbach's take on this. So where do third parties come in? Is that a dynamic that we energies would fight?
We need to understand exactly how that occurs. But if you look at renewables is a good example. In 2012, over half of our renewable resources came from other parties, not ourselves. So while we did build facilities in the state, the two largest wind farms, that was because we thought a certain part of the portfolio, it's good to have ownership over and control that, and some of those were from power purchase agreements that fell apart. Now, still the majority of the renewables that we provide to our customers are purchased through third parties, through competitive bids. In the last four years, three of those years, we put an RFP out on the streets where third parties could bid on, and we got very attractive, very competitive pricing, and that filled out our portfolio. So I think we've got a history of working with third parties in the market.
You're listening to our Project Milwaukee Power Switch Forum retrospective, recorded in front of a studio audience at Discovery World at Pier, Wisconsin in June. We'll have more after a break on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. It's Lake Effect, and I'm Bonnie North. You're listening to our Project Milwaukee Power Switch Forum on Clean Energy, which was recorded in mid-June. Let's get back to the discussion moderated by Mitch Tyke. Our guests are Tom Content of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Shala Werner of the Sierra Club, Deborah Irwin of the Public Service Commission, Chuck McGinnis of Johnson Controls, Andy Hesselbach of We Energies, and Gary Radloff of the Wisconsin Energy Institute.
Shala Werner, is progress going fast enough? We've heard about utilities being able to meet the standards sometimes ahead of schedule. You were talking a lot about how change has to come on the conservation end, but what about the standards in the state?
Well, I think that the Sierra Club and our members really like the 2015 part of the standards, but the 10%, enacted in 2006, we were one of the first states. I like to think of Wisconsin, my home state, as a leader, and now really among the 29 or 30 states that have renewable standards, we're getting to be on the bottom of the pack. And that's just a dangerous place to be. When you see the other states, every surrounding state has more wind installed than we do. And sometimes it's because of an RPS, but sometimes it's because that state decided, you know, we have this resource and we want to be a leader. And, you know, in the future, does Wisconsin want to have these resources installed locally by local businesses, our, you know, current 135 solar companies that are already in state? Or do we want to have to buy these products from other states and get transmission lines and, you know, import products from China? I don't think we need to do that when we have such fantastic resources here, both working with the utilities on grand utility scale, you know, large multi-megawatt projects, along with allowing homeowners to have the right to host solar panels, for instance, but it could go, that could also be used for other resources such as manure digesters. So the third-party ownership, 22 states have it. I would just look at what we have here and make sure that we don't get left behind. We want to be a leader in Wisconsin.
Tom Content, let me throw this to you. Is third-party ownership likely to be a hot political topic in the days to come?
Well, it's certainly being discussed a lot. There's groups that are advocating for it, that are working to build support for a proposal that they hope to see come to the legislature. There's no definitive time frame. It was discussed briefly the last session, but they're trying to organize it in such a way that build support for it. But it's still controversial because of the utilities have reservations about it. But I think it's an interesting topic to see what other states have done with it, and to see that Wisconsin, which has a lot of obviously dairy farms and cows, the appetite for using more of renewable energy on the farm is another thing that could drive interest, is driving interest in that, in the third party financing.
Chuck McGinnis, where does a company like Johnson Controls fit in the economic equation and really driving the discussion at all?
Well, Johnson Controls is a global leader in providing energy efficiency solutions to owners and managers of existing commercial buildings. And we see a great opportunity in the state of Wisconsin to use again, a balanced approach. But I've been impressed with the utilities in Wisconsin. I'm a native of Wisconsin. I've been impressed with the utilities. I think in the last 15 years, the power's gone off in my house once, and it was because of a lightning strike. You can't say that same sort of reliability exists throughout the country. So I think that the utilities have done a pretty good job in Wisconsin. And I think we're also in favor of, you know, increasing the renewable portfolio standard to more appropriate levels. But still, you know, even if we moved it to 15%, that's still 15%. The real opportunity is in the existing building stock. If you drive through downtown Milwaukee, it's right in front of your eyes. We have an old building stock, and you can make tremendous strides in the energy efficiency associated with that building stock. Shayla was talking about distributed and renewables specific to solar, which is a great solution. The beauty of solar energy is that you can implement it on a distributed basis as well as a utility scale basis, but it would certainly work on a distributed basis here in Wisconsin. And what that means is that somebody can buy a solar panel and put it on their building. It's not so easy to do that with a wind turbine. Not that wind turbines are not the right solution for our renewable needs long term, but it's more of a utility scale financial value proposition. So imagine being able to couple distributed renewable solutions with energy efficiency and mobilize to a large extent private sector dollars to finance that type of an arrangement so that these this existing building stock, which we have so many of these buildings built that are operating inefficiently, can utilize energy-efficient technology financed over a long term with a renewable solution, a solar energy solution built into it. We can make a tremendous impact on the footprint of this city and of the state. And what Johnson Controls does is we bring the solution set to the customers. We provide guaranteed energy solutions. We help them find available capital to do just that. And the city of Milwaukee has been a leader in this area. So I would go so far as to say we in Wisconsin should be a leader in the United States when it comes to these types of endeavors.
Gary Radloff, let me ask you this. There was a report not long ago by the Generally Free Market Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, which concluded that green energy at the moment is a money-losing proposition. Can this be both the right time and the wrong time to have this conversation?
That's a good question. I think, you know, what you have to realize is you have to start somewhere. So any sort of first-generation technology is going to be expensive, it's going to be less efficient, and you need to continuous improvement in it. But you have to start somewhere. So, what we've done is we've deployed technologies that were pretty readily available. What you've seen over the last 30 years is a continuous improvement in solar panels, for example, a continuous improvement in wind turbines, a continuous improvement in anaerobic digesters, which can take waste, such as at our dairy farms, and with a genset attached to it, make electricity or make natural gas or make compressed natural gas. Now, their upfront costs are expensive. So the question is, do you deploy them today or do you deploy them 10 or 20 years from now in terms of that upfront cost? Well, you have to start somewhere. So you deploy them today, you learn, you innovate, you have new people come into the marketplace with the next generation that's a better product, and then the third generation, which is even a better product. The efficiency improves, and then as the efficiency improves, typically the cost goes down. No guarantee, but typically the cost goes down. So I think we have to get into the marketplace as we have in a modest way. I think now it's time to probably ramp that up and get into the marketplace more with some of these new technologies. And again, as I alluded to earlier, we need to make sure that research and development is constantly occurring, whether it's at existing utilities or with new companies, so that we can get to Generation 3 and Generation 4 of clean energy technologies. And I think we're on the verge of doing that. I hate to say it, but I think Europe is actually leading in that way. But the U.S. is not that far behind that it couldn't catch up.
Well, and I wonder if Europe's leadership actually puts us in a position that this technology is the cost is being driven down by the success that that it's had in Europe at this point already.
Well, there's a certain synergy between the amount of deployment and the amount of innovation, and so you can't completely separate them. So Europe has been much more aggressive. I also think the missing piece, though, in this is policy that supports this. The European Union has what I consider to be a very elegant and very clear policy. It's called 20-20-20 by the year 2020, which was they wanted to reduce greenhouse gases by 20% from the 1990 levels. They wanted 20% renewable mix in their energy portfolio, and they wanted to see a 20% improvement in efficiency of their energy systems. The public understood it. The industry understood it. They then said to all of the European Union countries, design the policy you want to achieve that. They didn't tell them the policy. They just gave them the goal. So I think here in the U.S. we need to do something similar where we set some goals for our nation. 128 countries have renewable energy goals. The United States does not. That's a little embarrassing in my book.
Deborah Irwin, when the Public Service Commission is considering an application related to a power project, where does the mandate of sustainability fall in the review?
Well, it's definitely a part of any evaluation that we undertake. Wisconsin has a law called the Energy Priorities Law, and it basically says that when a utility is looking at investing some money, the first thing that you want to look at is energy efficiency. After energy efficiency, you'd look at non-combustible renewable resources like wind and solar, and after that would be combustible renewables, and after that would be other fossil fuel type resources. And so we look at that in the context of, is an alternative that has a higher priority cost-effective and technically feasible to solve the energy solution and the energy problem that you're looking at. And so in any application, that's the way that we're looking at it.
Shala Werner, what do you see as the greatest challenge in making sustainability a greater part of the energy portfolio here? Is it political willpower? Is it public willpower? Are people not speaking as loudly as you'd like them to?
I mean, I think that the policy challenges are formidable, and that's, you know, something that we can't ignore. On the other hand, you know, the public can take control as they see, you know, they want to make a difference. And so I think that as these resources drop in price, I mean, I know as a homeowner, as I said, everyone can do energy efficiency, and through focus on energy, most, you know, if their utility participates, you can get sometimes 50% back. And so I think people should try those low-tech solutions that you can do regardless of policy right now. And then if you do have a site that's acceptable, I think go ahead and take control of your energy use. I think there's so much that people can do as individuals, and then they do need to contact representatives about, you know, better policies. The third-party ownership that's been mentioned really cuts down on the $10,000 or $20,000 upfront cost. So if a third party owned that system and you were just hosting your great site for that, that makes sense. You know, so I think that there are a few policy things that we could do, but I also see some great things, you know, for the businesses who are willing to locate here, great things that they're doing to sort of walk customers through the process. We can do some things without policies. We can work with utilities to see what makes sense. Another thing that hasn't been mentioned much are electric charging stations for electric cars, if you wanted that industry to take off. And what's not to love if you're a utility, just expanding the network of charging stations throughout the state so that people don't have that range anxiety with their Nissan Leaf. That would be a great thing to see. So I think that, you know, given our policy situation, we need to think both inside and outside the box and really encourage people to do everything they can do right now to encourage the small businesses in their community and the utilities to do the right thing, maybe because it makes sense, maybe because it creates jobs, maybe because they care about climate change, or maybe all three. And I think once we see that working on the ground, others will follow suit, and maybe someday the state capital situation will even change.
You're listening to our Project Milwaukee Power Switch Forum retrospective, recorded in front of a studio audience at Discovery World at Pier, Wisconsin in June. We'll have more after a break on Lake Effect from WUWM. It's Lake Effect, and I'm Bonnie North. You're listening to our Project Milwaukee Power Switch Forum retrospective on clean energy, recorded in mid-June. We'll get back to the discussion, which was moderated by Mitch Tyke. Our guests included Tom Content of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Shala Werner of the Sierra Club, Deborah Irwin of the Public Service Commission, Chuck McGinnis of Johnson Controls, Andy Hesselbach of We Energies, and Gary Radloff of the Wisconsin Energy Institute.
Let me stick with the electric car model for just a moment, because I actually spoke with someone for today's edition of Lake Effect, and he suggested that the Toyota Prius is the perfect example of how the free market can drive change, not only as a symbol but as something that makes a difference, and why government isn't the answer to all of these issues. Let me ask all of you this question. What do you see as the role of government in driving this conversation? I mean, can it entirely be done by the free market, or is there a place for policymakers to require change at some level? And we'll just Tom Content, let me see your take on, you know, where the Prius model falls.
Well, just picking up on the Prius, because we've been talking more about the grid than transportation, I think that's a good example. The Prius came out, you know, more than a decade ago, and is now one of the top selling cars. But government does play a role. The U.S. didn't pass a cap and trade bill in Congress, but arguably one of the biggest steps that the United States has taken on carbon emissions is the CAFE standards, the fuel economy standards that have been implemented from the Obama administration twice in the first term. And as a result, it's taking what the MPGs have to get better to meet these emission standards, and that's driving more hybrids, that's driving more one hopes more innovation to bring down the cost of battery technology, which some of which is happening right here in Milwaukee. But that's government playing a role and the private sector playing a role. I went to an auto industry conference in mid 2000s, and fuel economy, whether people cared about fuel economy, wasn't in the top 10 concerns for car buyers. And within a few years, it had changed dramatically, and here we are today in Milwaukee with $4 gas. So it is definitely a mix of economic and government, I think.
Deborah Irwin, what's your take on the Prius metaphor, if you will?
Well, there tends to be criticism when the government tries to pick winners and losers. And so, one role for government can be, if there's a particular policy objective you want to achieve, identify that objective, not necessarily how to get there, and then let the market try to find the path on the way there. The other thing that could potentially be a role for government would be, there is volatility in the marketplace sometimes, in gas prices or electricity prices, natural gas prices, as they affect the price of electricity. And so, if government wants to minimize the volatility or, try to get you through that in some way, then that could potentially be a role for government.
Gary Radloff, is it foolish to think of the Prius as a free market only example?
Yes. I do think the private sector can, without question, be the tremendous source of creativity and innovation and new ideas and new products. But the government definitely has a role, and anyone who thinks that isn't the case, I'll debate that one vigorously. And I'll give you an example, which is one that we're seeing right now. And it's controversial, hydraulic fracking. Hydraulic fracking would not have happened without 30 to 40 years of government-subsidized research and support. Everybody thinks it was this, the market magically discovered hydraulic fracking and we got all these new shale gas reserves in the United States. No, it was 30 to 40 years of government recognition that we needed new energy sources, and the first generation of drilling technology just got the real easy stuff in what was called the domes. The next generation got a little harder material, what was under the geologic domes. Well, hydraulic fracking is trying to get at the really, really difficult stuff by vertical drilling and things that's kind of deeply buried in the ground. Now, I'm not going to get into the debate about the environmental issues right now of hydraulic fracking, although, again, if people want to talk about that later, I'm happy to. But just from a technology standpoint, the government drove the research and development in that area. The private sector seized it, took it further, and ultimately made it cost-effective. But, again, government subsidy on research and development was critical.
Andy Hesselbach, we've kind of talked a little bit about this already with you, but what about the idea of free market versus government? Where do the utilities fall in that discussion?
Well, I'd say they're both heavy influencers. All you have to do is look at from air permits to water permits, anything around operating facilities, to renewable portfolio standards, to the existence of Focus on Energy was a legislative item. Something on the order of $57 million a year we collect from our customers that goes to Focus on Energy. So public policy is throughout the energy industry at all different levels. So there's no doubt it's a driver. I would agree that the free market at times does a pretty good job. I just think of emissions out of traditional coal plants. In our last construction phase, we added 50%, increased our production by 50%, and cut our emissions by 70%. Out of those and new existing and new facilities. So you had a standard set, and then the market came to bear in technologies that 15 years earlier they probably never thought they could achieve some of those same targets. So I don't think you can talk about one without the other. I don't think policy could mandate a truly unreachable target, but together they work out to a good solution. And lastly, to us, I think the important aspect of public policy is that it evaluates all customers. Because some programs at times will get those who are of economic means and otherwise can buy the solar panel, can place the solar panel on their house or other methods, and others who cannot end up picking up some of that, the loaded cost, if you will, of distributing the energy in general. So economic and or equality and fairness among all customer classes is probably just an item we think should be a part of the discussion throughout.
Can I stick with you for one second? Let me ask this kind of big question of you, and that is, is conservation necessarily at odds with what We Energies does? You know, if the demand for what you make goes down, it would seem that you would make less money.
I would say we've been working compatibly with demand-side management programs since in the 90s. We had smart money programs and a whole range of things. Before Focus on Energy, before there was the public benefits type structure we currently have where we collect the funds given to the state and they manage them, the utilities throughout the state manage those type of same services themselves. I started out as a utilization engineer. I went to commercial and industrial customers in the early 90s and helped them operate their systems and buildings more efficiently. So it's been at least 20 years of my history where the utilities have been heavily engaged and also before the state ran the programs themselves.
I'll jump over to Chuck McGinnis, and then, Shala, I want to get your take on the free market versus government question as well.
Thanks, Mitch. So the way that Johnson Controls looks at free market versus public policy is as a partnership, where the research and development is funded by public organizations, there has to be a ready partner in the private sector in order to implement that research. The same is true with public policy and energy efficiency. And by the way, we believe that utilities should be allowed to earn on energy efficiency the same way that they would earn on, you know, the production of electricity. We think a great example of where public policy connects to the private sector is what's happening right here in Milwaukee with the Milwaukee Energy Efficiency Program called ME2. It was originally funded by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and supported by the Common Council here in the city of Milwaukee. It's demonstrating how energy efficiency can be an important economic development strategy right here in Milwaukee. You know, in Milwaukee, we're not really a wealthy community in comparison to others, yet we spend a significant portion of our budget on electric energy and natural gas, and we often spend more than surrounding communities because of our older building stock. The ME2 program has provided innovative financing options and incentives to help homeowners and businesses redirect their limited budgets to these types of projects. To date, ME2 has improved over 600 homes in Milwaukee, over 137 business projects worth $14 million, and they've invested this funding from the federal government wisely. They're now looking at a program that leverages private sector capital to do these types of projects because the ARRA money was used to prove how they would work. And so, you know, a great example of this was the Wells Building on East Wisconsin Avenue. If you drive down Wisconsin Avenue, you'll see this gem on the right-hand side, built in 1902. A few years ago, it was half vacant with outdated mechanical systems. The ME2 program provided financing and incentives to support an overhaul of the cooling systems. By the time they're done, they'll save 18 million gallons of water in the usage of that building annually and cut their energy bills by 25%. They're also going to be in a position to compete for prime office tenants, and we were proud to have been delivered the entire project and financed over a number of years with private sector funding. Dozens of other contractors have benefited from this also. So we think that the ME2 program is a great example of connecting public policy with the readiness of the private sector, creating jobs. And you know, once you start this trend, then you start an employment bubble, right? You have to provide new employees. And where do those folks come from? They come from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. They come from Milwaukee Area Technical College. And so, you know, it's a good problem to have.
Shala?
Yeah, I would agree with the other panelists that you need some, you know, free market growth. And I think an investment, that's an excellent thing to have. I drove my 11-year-old Prius here today and still going fine.
It was a first-generation Prius.
Nearly, yeah. And so that can be great. You know, I got a tax benefit when I bought that, so I wouldn't say it was completely free of public policy. You look at, I'm glad that Gary mentioned, you know, renewable energy isn't the only industry that receives subsidies. And so it's almost like leveling the playing field. If the government can't provide incentives, maybe at least just get out of the way. Don't freeze our renewable energy standards. Don't undermine uniform wind siting standards that we already have in Wisconsin. And if we can improve it, we really need to right now. The 10% goal for renewables is lower than Minnesota's and Illinois, you know, just from the Big Ten standpoint. Again, do we want to be falling behind? I don't think so, and it doesn't make sense. And so given that utilities have met the goal or they're on track to meet our current renewable energy goals, it is immensely important to provide business certainty for our current clean energy businesses in Wisconsin to set new goals, make stretch goals, but carefully design those policies so, as Andy mentioned, that they don't negatively impact ratepayers. I think the lack of an energy strategy right now might be why we have some of the highest electricity rates in the Midwest. We can design good policies and have clean energy without negatively impacting ratepayers, and we can look to the states that have already done it and done it well to make sure that we avoid some of the pitfalls of, say, you know, rewarding the clean energy investors so much that you hurt other ratepayers. We don't want to see that. I think we want to do this right so that it's adopted on a wider scale.
Let me ask one more question of Gary Radloff. What are the forms of clean energy that have the most promise at this day, in this day and age in Wisconsin? Is it biomass? Is it wind? Is it something that we're not even talking about yet?
All of the above. Well, no, I think with Wisconsin, you know, we are not going to be a huge wind generator just because of sort of the way the wind blows, if you will. But that doesn't mean we couldn't have a significant wind portfolio. Similarly, we're not ever going to have solar opportunities the way California or Arizona does, but we could certainly have a lot of solar power. I look at Germany, which is probably the global leader in solar development, pretty much very similar to Wisconsin in terms of where it lies on the map. But so for Wisconsin, I think biomass and biogas are a great opportunity. We have a lot of agriculture and forestry sector, which has a lot of waste that can be actually converted to energy. I think that whole area of waste to energy is a great opportunity that we have not fully explored as a state or as a society. Wastewater treatment plants, landfills can generate energy. Farms can, and I think eventually your home may as well. You know, someday we might have a little box at your home that generates energy by using your own waste. So I think waste energy is a really untapped resource as well. So, you know, some people call that homegrown energy. I think that's kind of a nice term. I don't know that that ever gets us quite to scale, but I do think it could continually improve in our marketplace.
Tom Content?
I'm just following up on the from beyond wasted energy. I always think waste to energy. I always think of wasted energy. And you think about how buildings account for 30% of energy use. And what, as a reporter, I usually have, I'm usually in a different position. I have more questions than I have answers. And one of the questions that I keep coming back to is why don't we do more in the area of energy efficiency when it comes to buildings, et cetera. Other states have different mechanisms in place that where the utilities sales their profits aren't necessarily plummeting when you do more energy efficiency. So there's different policy options out there that Wisconsin could think about.
What do you think is the reason that energy efficiency isn't on the map as much in Wisconsin as it is in some places? Is it a policy issue?
Wisconsin has been a leader with focus on energy. It's just a question of whether the opportunity is still so big. So give Wisconsin credit for creating focus and that it has done well. But you see that And you see examples where there's one Wisconsin utility that has actually done an experiment with what's called decoupling, where you don't see the profit suffer if sales go down. And that's a big issue after the recession, when electricity demand and manufacturers closed and electricity demand went south across the Midwest and in Wisconsin. So now we're sitting in a spot where we have a lot of power generation, and it makes it a challenging situation.
And that concludes our Project Milwaukee Power Switch Forum retrospective on clean energy, which concluded our series and was recorded and first broadcast in June. It was moderated by Mitch Teich and engineered by John Strelecki. Annalise Hensel is the executive producer of Project Milwaukee. Our panelists were Tom Content of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Shala Werner of the Sierra Club, Deborah Irwin of the Public Service Commission, Chuck McGinnis of Johnson Controls, Andy Hasselbach of We Energies, and Gary Radloff of the Wisconsin Energy Institute. The question and answer portion of the forum is available in its entirety on our website, as is the entire series of Lake Effect and WUWM Newsroom reports. You can find it all on wuwm.com/Project Milwaukee. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us today. Lake Effect comes your way every weekday morning at 10 on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next.